When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
The experimentation is going to continue. I'm parked on an exceedingly busy street in Ann Arbor tonight as I wait for my wife to get out of work. So there's going to possibly be a little bit of background noise this time, but it's supposed to be the passing of cars. It's not going to be anything too obnoxious, I hope. Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show that I record in my car at the end of my workday, sharing some thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist. Before I get to those thoughts, I thought I'd throw out a little bit of a plug. The earlier episodes of this show, I recorded on an iPhone app called Caster. And I still stand by that app. I think it's really good. It's only, well, I think it's $4 in the iTunes App Store. And it does what a lot of the other recording apps cannot do. Like, you can actually edit the show that you record right in the device and export it as an MP4 file via email, FTP, right to your computer if you want, and then convert it to an MP3 and then upload it to the site. That's how I do the Thunder Punch Dailies. But I've recently switched, well, not recently, but as of like episode 5 or 6 or something, I switched to using this one called Hindenburg Mobile. And now this one's pricey. This one is $30, if I'm not mistaken. It's the most I've ever spent on an iPhone app. And I remember when I bought it, Mark kind of raised his eyebrows at me, like, you sure you want to buy a $30 app? But what it does that none of the other voice recording / podcasting apps does is it actually, you can copy and paste between tracks. You can do really fine-tuned editing. It actually shows you the waveform, as does Caster, but also the interface is just gorgeous. It feels like an Apple product. For those of you who have enjoyed the Apple products, you know what it's like, the difference between using an app designed for Apple and one that wasn't, in terms of just ease of use. But on top of everything else, Hindenburg has this desktop app, this free desktop app for your computer, where you can also like download the edited files that you do and do some more fine tuning there if you want. But I, like I said many times, these podcasts are recorded entirely in my car, produced entirely in my car. I export them via FTP on my way home. And then when I get home, there's an MP4 sitting on my server that I download and then just convert to an MP3 and then re-upload. So it's a pretty smooth operation. There's very little labor done at home on this thing. And that's what keeps these things kind of fresh and fun for me. So anyway, there's a little thought on keeping your work fun and how technology is changing. I mean, I was pretty astonished by how good the microphone is on this. I'm just using the second generation iPhone to record these. So if you are an iPhone user and you're thinking about doing these little journal microcasts, you might want to check out Hindenburg Mobile or Caster, depending on your budget. So what am I thinking about today? Well, now that I've burned through a couple of minutes, right, cutting into my time to discuss comic stuff, I thought I'd share a few thoughts on lettering. And as usual, Kim Holm is the inspiration for this one, because I was talking with him on Art and Story Extreme last week, the episode called Doom, which I remember the date on that. I think it was the 25th of March. And we were talking a little bit about an illustration that he did of Dr. Doom, and we got, just briefly, we were talking about hand lettering. Now, he, as usual, Kim says something that I thought was a very, very good expression to help us think about more deeply about what this thing is that we do. And he said, when you're hand lettering, as opposed to digitally lettering, you are drawing letters. You're not writing letters. You're drawing them. And when you start thinking about it that way, I think it trains your mind to start twisting and chomping on this idea as if, yes, this is an aspect of comics that has artistic potential to express ideas. And most people get that. You know, we all know the difference between bolded text and regular width text. Bolded text has emphasis on it, or italicized text does the same thing. Making writing all in caps sounds a certain way to us, as does when you see get an email from somebody where there's no capitalization at all, or even any punctuation, where it's one eternally running on sentence. So we have a sense of this. Anybody who's read the poetry of E.E. Cummings If you haven't, I advise you to check it out, because he, whether or not you like poetry, he's what I find interesting about him is he was a guy who understood a lot of the principles of comic storytelling, and he used it in his poetry, in the whole way he used space and the space between lines to pace out our reading experience. So there's that. I mean, really, I agree with Kim that think of it as drawing your letters is the first step to really understanding this whole lettering thing. Because, and Mark and I did a couple episodes a while back of Art and Story, The Big Balloon 2. I was really pleased with that episode. I advise you to go back and listen to it if you haven't yet. And The Big Sound Effect, that was one of my favorite episodes, because that's one of my favorite subjects, because thinking about how to design sound, how to make sound with words, both thinking phonetically, how to spell it, what font to use, what kind of line style to use around that font, and what colors to use, and how present is it going to be in the panel. All those things contribute to a really good sound effect. And this is the neat thing. You have that same opportunity within word balloons. The font you choose, and I really do think that more people need to think a little bit more carefully about the fonts they choose. I get emails from people all the time like, oh, could you check out a few pages of my comic and share a few thoughts? Lettering is always one of the first things that jumps out at me as, okay, you know, your word balloons are designed well and they're good shape and they have a good integration on the page. But man, oh man, why are you using Comic Sans? You know, why are you using, and nothing wrong with Comic Sans per se, but it is not... You want a type of font that integrates with the rest of your art. And if you can't make your own font, I mean, I happen to have my own font that I built myself, and I think that helps integrate it into the artwork. But if you can't do that, then you really should. There are so many comics fonts now between comicbookfonts.com and blambot.com. And to pay for them too. You get a paid one if that's the one for you. If you find a free one that works for your stuff, great. But I really do think that more of us should be doing style tests, comparing our artwork with our font, with multiple different fonts. Like the same panel, the same word balloon, just re-letter it. If you're going to do digital lettering, do it 3, 4, 5 different fonts just so you can see which one feels right. And I think you can trust that kind of gut reaction when it comes to that. Even when I was using my own font, if you go back and look at some of my earlier lettered work, because, you know, I haven't been doing this all that long. The first comic ever digitally lettered was PPV back in 2002, and I did not get it yet. I did not know how to integrate balloons into the panels. By the way, again, we talk about that in The Big Balloon too, but I'm going to talk about this more in some future Thunder Punch dailies, because there's not enough time per episode to cover it all. But I didn't know how to integrate the balloons into the panels properly, and I certainly didn't know how to make the font the right size so that it reads clearly and also looks like it fits within the aspect ratio of the balloon. I had too much white space in my balloons in PPV. I answered that a little bit in the front, but in the first draft, which is the one that's online at mlatcomics.com, that's the unedited version. When I went back to when I went to print it as the graphic novel, I re-lettered the entire book because I learned so much about lettering over that time. And the original draft is lettered entirely in Photoshop. The graphic novel, the paper version, is lettered in Adobe Illustrator. And one of the big things I learned over the course of that time was how much space to put around between the end of your letters and the edge of the word balloon, and have it feel balanced. But also, in terms of ratio of bolded words to non-bolded words, this is a kind of a dicey area, and I don't have a hard and fast rule because, as you know, I'm not a big fan of pro tips, and I don't want to just say, like, oh, 30%, no more than 30% of your words should be bolded. I think that that's kind of prescriptive nonsense. It's a taste and touch thing, but it is something that I think you should be careful of. Now, when I say bolded words, what do I mean? To go back to some of this earlier talk about we know what it means when we see a bolded word. In comics, you got that much more expressive potential by using font size and font width and letter width and boldness, I guess, for lack of a better term, to emphasize the cadence and rhythm of the speech. So if you look at a waveform, if you take like the audio from, say, this episode, because I tend to fluctuate my voice a lot, actually go to do some of the Art and Story ones where I get really super excited about it, and I start talking really fast, and then my voice gets really high, and then my voice gets really quiet and low when I start to make my points like this. Yeah, I'm aware I do that stuff, guys. You want to know why? Because people point it out to me. But if you were to take that and look at it as, on a waveform in an audio editing program, like say Audacity, that's a nice free one you can look at. You can see where it starts spiking out really thick and wide. Those would be words that could possibly be bolded. Bolding the words in your balloons, in your dialogue, gives us a sense of the cadence. It also gives us a sense of emphasis and the acting. Too often, I'll see lettering that's done where it's just written out like text from a script. And if they do, you know, in most lettering fonts, everything is in capital letters anyway, so you don't have that as an option. So you have to either italicize or bold. Now, again, I'm not going to give you a hard and fast rule from the Book of Jurors on how to which one is right. I think both of them work. Bob Lappin is a letterer who uses both bolding and italicizing at different times to give different kinds of levels of intensity in his word balloons. But I think it should be used. Fairly often, but again, not too often, because otherwise it starts to sound like it's a William Shatner interpretation of your character. You don't want to come across like a bad impression of Shatner doing, you know, a Shakespearean soliloquy, you know, because it'll have like a staccato rhythm, right? Because like if every fourth word is bolded, then you get that punctuation and intensity every fourth word or so. Maybe not every word, but sometimes. These words, right? You don't want that either. So, using thick and thin lines in your lettering, and think about them as drawing elements. Just how we talk about line value on the show all the time. Even past Thunder Punch Daily, when I was talking about line value, the same thing applies to the lettering you use in your balloons. And I promise, in future episodes, I'm going to go into a little bit more detail about balloon placement. Some things that I've learned not to do with my word balloons, and even start examining some of the kinds of techniques that I use in Adobe Illustrator to get these things done. And you know, I also promise that in the near future I will be doing a Adobe Illustrator lettering tutorial to actually show the nuts and bolts of how I do it. But I thought this would be a good platform for me to kind of examine some of the theoretical kind of wanderings about lettering. So. Yes, everything in comics is an expression of the idea. I haven't used this analogy in a long time, but I'll close on this. Because I think it's not perfect, but it's roughly there. I like to think of the panel shapes and sizes as the backbeat in the music, okay? That's the drums, that's the percussion. And then we introduce the artwork within the panels. And art itself has a bit of a rhythm to it. And so that becomes sort of like the mid-range, like our bass guitars and maybe, you know, our tenor sax and whatever kind of like, maybe like a cello or something. The low ends, the soulful string instruments and that kind of music. And then when we introduce the word balloons, that's our trumpets, that's our lead guitar, that's our vocalist, okay? And those things can work together harmonically, or they can work against each other cacophonously, depending on what you want. But whatever you do, it should be intentional. You don't become cacophonous when you're trying to become harmonic and say, well, I guess that's just the way it goes. It should always be done with the greatest of focus and intent, in my opinion. And we don't always do it right the first time. It takes a lot of learning, but that's the fun of this thing, is the never-ending struggle for perfection, knowing that we'll never get to that last decimal point. It's like trying to travel at the speed of light. It's just physically impossible, but that doesn't mean we should try to go as close to it as we can. Okay, that sounded like a little bit of a positive, uplifting, self-help guru kind of way to close this one out. I apologize for that. Yeah, it's weird when you do talking on your own like this and do these little essays. You find yourself, at least I do, find myself slipping into that, or at least closer to that than I hope to or want to. So who am I? I'm Jersey Droz of jdroz.com and Jersey on the Twitter, J-E-R-Z-Y. Thanks for subscribing to this. Thanks for supporting the Thunder Punch, or the Thunder Punch? Well, yeah, you are supporting the Thunder Punch Daily Podcast, but you're also supporting everybody else in the Art and Story Supreme Project, Mark Rudolph and Kevin Cross. They got their microcasts that are worth checking out. The extra episodes of Extreme, the extra Art Story Supreme a month, and don't forget about those forums. You can discuss this stuff there. Thank you for responding in the forums, everybody. Those of you who have been participating in there, I am just absolutely delighted by the conversations that are going on in there, and I'm going to try to make, it's my personal goal to be in there every day if I can. I will be there every day, but I mean, I can only respond so much, but man, it's far exceeded my hopes. This thing is really moving along great, and you guys have been making my, Mark's, and Kevin's month with your support of this project. So thanks. We really couldn't do it without you. So, okay. Until next time, remember, everybody.
In today's story, I was very angry at Baron Grodd. I was supposed to try and talk him out of hunting the unicorn, but I kept losing my temper. And when you lose your temper, you can't think clearly. We all get angry at times, but we should learn to control our tempers. It's better to stay cool and talk things out reasonably. Now, it's not always easy, but it's usually the best way to solve any problem. Until next time, bye.